people of Teen Wolf Land. These introductions never get less awkward, but this is episode 26 of Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, talking about Frayed, which is episode 3.5, so fifth episode, third season, of MTV's Teen Wolf. We over at Not Another Teen Wolf podcast are always here for you to talk to. You know, we can give you advice, or you can share your, you know, share your theories, you can receive some consolations for your loss, anything like that, you know, for a 24-hour helpline that can, you know, for any trauma that Teen Wolf is causing you. And it is, you know, that's reachable. We're always reachable on Twitter, which is NATW Podcast, Tumblr, which is the full URL, notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or our Gmail, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com. So, you know, if you're having trouble, don't be afraid to reach out. The comeback of Teen Wolf has been a really big thing in fandom. It's, I think over the summer, I think over the past year since last summer that it's been off, it's really, that's when the fandom has really exploded. It was picking up speed before then, but in that, it seems like a lot of people and a lot of major press outlets in that off-season has really discovered how huge the Teen Wolf fandom is. One of those being us at Hyperbole. We started covering it as a fandom a little less than a year ago, after the second season. And to celebrate the return of Teen Wolf Season 3, we've dedicated this entire month to a special focus on Teen Wolf. So Karen's been pretty much heading that up.
Yeah, it's been really fun so far. We're about a week and a half into it, and we've already gotten some articles up. We've got one that went out today about Greenberg, which was really funny. Kyle wrote that, if you guys remember him. We've got some that went up about the adults of Teen Wolf and why we love them. We had dating profiles for some of the characters, which Brooke wrote. She's part of the podcast behind the scenes, and those were really funny. I really enjoyed reading those. And then we've got a bunch of stuff coming up too. We're gonna have a music article coming up soon. We've got a couple of interviews in the works, which I think you guys are gonna be really excited about. So definitely just keep checking hypeable.com. We're trying to put up articles just about every day. And comment, spread the word, use the tag Teen Wolf Takeover on Twitter and Tumblr, and let's see if we can really kind of celebrate this TV show.
Yay! Okay, so for this episode, Frayed, basically they use a narrative structure which we haven't really had before in such a consistent way in Teen Wolf. We've had one or two flashbacks, but this entire episode is, you know, one of those ones that begins at the end, begins after the main events, and then during the course of this this time period, this bus ride that the students are on, we basically get flashbacks as they discuss their current predicament. So they get flashbacks to the events of, I guess, the previous day or the previous week or whatever the time period is in this episode.
The synopsis for Frayed says, during a bus ride to a cross-country meet, Scott and his friends flash back to the events of a preemptive strike against the Alphas that has left several injured and possibly one or more dead. So which were your two favorite lines from this episode?
One of the ones that really got me, it was pretty throwaway actually, but it just represented so much, I thought, was in the bus ride in the present day, where Scott and Stars are kind of discussing everything, and they, you know, they're like, oh, maybe we should ask, you know, Allison and Lydia for help. You know, they're not going to be able to get here. They're back at, you know, at Beacon Hills or whatever. And Stars is just like, nah, they've been following us for hours. Pathetic. And kind of looks out the back of the bus window. And it's just, even though Scott is becoming more, you know, confident and capable, you know, is using his intelligence as, you know, he's becoming a bit quicker on the uptake and better to formulate plans and things like that. Styles is still naturally, you know, it's still one of those moments that kind of makes Scott look a bit dumb just because of how observant Styles naturally is and how sort of crafty he naturally is. And I just found it really, really funny. And again, Stiles's phone call then to Lydia, where he was, she's like, "Oh, we're going into a movie," and he's like, "I know you're following us. Put me on speakerphone." I just loved that whole little thing. The other bit I liked was in one of the flashback parts, which was when they're trying to do their preemptive strike on the Alphas, and it's a great sparring, I think, actually between Scott and Peter, who really are seeming to, they're becoming very good dialogue with each other. I know one of your quotes is between Scott and Peter as well, but Scott's sort of like, "Why is the default plan always murder?" Which just as a sentence is very, very Buffy-like, very like, very like, very quotey in a Buffy sort of way. He says, "Why is the default plan always murder? Just once, can someone try and come up with something that doesn't involve killing everyone?" And then Peter says, "Never get tired of being so blandly moral, do you?" And apart from it being very funny, it just makes me wonder, like, I think, Deucalion says the same thing to Scott, but does he really expect to deal with all of these problems by never killing anyone? Like, while it would be ideal, like, how much does he consider, like, for example, in the Buffy world, she and anyone else involved seems to have qualms about killing someone who's human. And there's, tossing up of what that counts as, and obviously when there's a werewolf in Buffy, that sort of gets tossed up as well about whether that counts, But she can kill 1,200 demons all night, demons who have personalities and who have likes and dislikes and interests, and that we see, who might have, love even, but because they are in name demon, she has no qualms killing them without considering it a person. And I'm just wondering, like, what Scott would be okay with. Like, would he, he obviously wasn't okay with killing the Canimer because he knew the Canimer was Jackson. Does he just not want any death? Does he think that's like a feasible thing? Does he understand the, world he's now in potentially has different rules? And do you think that Scott will make it through the series without killing anyone?
That's a really good and a really tough question. I think Scott is very moral, and I think he does honestly believe that he can make it through without killing anybody, because I feel like he just thinks that if he can just talk sense into these people, then they'll understand where he's coming from. They'll understand that he's not doing anything bad, that he really doesn't want to hurt them. They'll kind of see the light and they'll agree that, okay, we're not going to kill anybody else. Obviously, that isn't really the case. And it is surprising that, I mean, considering Deucalion is sort of the worst one that we've come up across so far. I mean, we had Peter in the first season, but once we found out it was Peter, it was this sort of gray area because he is, Derek's uncle. So there's like a whole little hesitation on that front because of that. But the thing is that Deucalion is sort of the most evil that we've had so far. There's really no connection that we've seen yet to any of the others. Scott really has no reason to say, "Hey, maybe we shouldn't kill this guy," and yet he still doesn't. He doesn't think that they should do that. So I have a feeling that, yeah, he really doesn't want to kill anybody, and even Deucalion or anything like that. So it's definitely something interesting to think about. What was your second question?
Oh, just do you think whether he will make it through the series without, without killing anyone or anything?
Right. Yeah, that's, if he makes it through without killing anybody, I will be surprised, but at the same time, I know that Jeff is very against that, given what we've seen in the second season, the commentary. He specifically says, "Oh, we can't have our hero kill anybody. Like, that's just not who Scott is." And so I will be very surprised if he does kill somebody, but at the same time, where this is going, where the plot is taking us and how much horror we're getting this season, I'll be surprised as well if he doesn't end up killing somebody, even if it is on accident. And maybe that's sort of a plot device that they're going to use and have him maybe accidentally kill one of the alphas, and he'll have to deal with that guilt and sort of come to terms with that.
Yeah, because I mean, someone getting killed in a fight, like a physical fight, is a bit different from them like plotting out to go kill someone. Like if he was defending himself and, you know, his wounds inflicted a death on someone, you know, might be a bit different. But I honestly, yeah, I just don't know how he thinks that where this is all going to go. I mean, if he can talk them all back down into being, you know, people, you know, because people just don't go and kill each other. I mean, they're not the mob, you know, they're not in the mafia or a gang. They are, you know, people on the street, civilians don't, you know, solve their little problems by going and killing each other. So, I mean, I get that, like, he wants, you know, Deucalion is, like, power crazed and that's how he gets power and stuff. But maybe if Scott can just talk to everyone and remind them all that this isn't how nice civilized people act, even if they do happen to have some extra powers, then it will all be okay. Anyway,
Yeah.
your quotes, Karen.
Scott, ever the optimist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so this first quote is kind of my favorite because for a lot of reasons. Okay. So Boyd says, this is during actually the same part, and I really like the sort of back and forth between Scott and Peter, and I think it's interesting that Peter agreed with Scott at that one instance after he said like he didn't really want to go after the Alpha Pack either, and I was like, oh, that's kind of a turn of the tables, you know? But at the same time, Peter's always looking to save his own hide, so I guess it's really not that surprising. But Boyd says, cut off the head of a snake and the body dies. So they're thinking about attacking Deucalion to get rid of the rest of the Alpha Pack. And then Peter says, only this isn't a snake, it's a Hydra. There's a couple more lines here back and forth. And then he continues and he says, do you know what happened when Hercules cut off one of the heads of the Hydra? And Scott says, two more grew back in its place. And Peter says, somebody has been doing their summer reading. And I was just like, Matt would be so proud right now.
Oh, yeah.
But I loved it because Scott's finally, I mean, it's just another instance of where he is doing his homework more, he's studying more, he's paying attention to things, and of course, you know, anytime they can throw in some Greek myth allusions makes me really happy. But I just love that Scott knew that answer and Peter was kind of impressed by him, and it just really brought me back to Furies, the episode Furies, when Matt was yelling at him for, you know, it's Oedipus, dumbass, and so it was just really great.
Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, you are, you know, nothing if not consistent in your, you know, love for things such as this and your utmost dedication to poor dead Matt.
I don't really know if that's something I should be proud
Well,
of.
it's funny, so, you know, go with it.
Okay, all right. Moving on. My second one is actually not a funny line at all. It was actually really heartfelt, but it was definitely another favorite of all of the quotes that, you know, we've been doing this for a long time. All of our episodes, we've always had these quotes in the beginning, and these two really are some of the top ones, I think, out of all of Teen Wolf. And Allison's line was, when she was talking to her dad, with all the family I've lost, I could use a few friends. And I just really loved how she stood up to her dad, and, you know, she really does need her friends right now, and they need her. And I think everything that has happened, that's sort of, it's kind of surprising because you'd think everybody would still hate her and she wouldn't really want anything to do with them because everything that's gone on, but she's really trying to work through what she did and what happened, and her friends are willing to, you know, stay with her, especially if she keeps saving their butts, which, you know,
Yeah.
obviously helps her cause a little bit. But it's true, she's lost so many people and she really needs to be there for her friends, and I just really enjoyed how she stood up to her dad and told him that.
Yeah, no, I did as well. I mean, Allison, I think, was the best aspect of this episode. I know in the Q&A Jeff did the night before it aired, you know, someone asked, he said, you've said before that for every episode you have kind of a favorite thing in each episode or a favorite character. Who is it for this one? And he says Allison, and I agree with that. There's a lot about this episode I'm not really all that sure about, but everything character-wise, like the character work they did on a lot of characters was very good, but hers was the best.
Yeah, we'll get into this a little bit later, but the scene in the bathroom was incredible, and I can't wait to talk about it.
Okay, I mean, I guess we can get started into going through it. It's a bit of a difficult episode to kind of recount, whether you meant to recount it in chronological order or in the order that the scenes appear in the television or whatever. But basically, obviously, it's a total flashback episode in that they're starting out on the bus, and we kind of discover pretty soon that they are recounting, you know, that it's weird that they're there and that they're recounting things that have happened in the past night or week, as we've said. They're on the bus going to a cross-country meet, and Scott and Stiles are sitting up the back, and Boyd and Isaac are sitting together, and Boyd wants to attack Ethan, who's sitting on the bus with Danny by himself. Aiden is not there. Ethan keeps checking his phone every couple of minutes, and Danny's kind of like, "Oh, what's up?" without really knowing what's going on. And Stiles is helping Scott study, still doing his word of the days, but Scott is injured, still injured, like kind of really injured from a wound from an alpha, even though Boyd and Isaac are fine. And we basically find out by Scott going, "I can't believe he's dead," that apparently the outcome of this fight is that Derek is dead. So what did you kind of make of that whole opening scene set up as a flashback episode?
Well, let's just kind of get this out of the way right in the beginning. I mean, Natalie and I have talked, and neither one of us really enjoyed this episode all that much. Not to say that there weren't some really fantastic parts in it, but I think the structure was really confusing and not in a good, like, Doctor Who, it's so complicated and you really, like, kind of get sucked into it sort of thing. But I was confused through a lot of the episode, and on my rewatch, it was a lot better, and I was able to focus more on the story and what actually happened rather than just going, what's going on? So this first part really confused me, but at the same time, like, I knew Derek wasn't dead. I knew he wasn't going to be dying. There was no, it was so anticlimactic because I knew for a fact that Derek was going to be in later episodes. And I mean, I was still interested to find out, like, how he was, you know, quote unquote dead, and then how he was gonna come back, but it didn't, there wasn't any, like,
Stakes.
yeah, there was nothing at stake really, because we kind of, I mean, I see a lot of spoilers and stuff because I have to cover the show for Hypeable, but I think even a casual watcher would be like, they're probably not gonna kill off Derek.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Like that was the kind of big thing. Number one, I was a little bit confused at first. I knew they were doing a flashback episode, but I kind of had forgotten, if you know what I mean. They talked about it earlier, you know, and they were like, we talked about it, and I'd sort of forgotten that this was the one. And so I was like, when Stiles was kind of like, "Oh, is it kind of weird that we're here now after everything that went on?" I thought he might have been talking about like the murder of the teacher in his school and like, you know, the murders of the two teachers and all of that, and that you know, it was only when like Scott got, you know, showed the injury, and I'm like, when did that happen? Hang on. And then when he was like, "Oh, I can't
Exactly,
believe
yeah.
Derek's dead," I'm like, "Oh yeah, that's this episode, okay." But saying, "Oh, I can't believe Derek's dead," it immediately takes away, I think, any stakes, you know, any real thrill or like horror or investment, because I don't feel like this show has casual watchers. I like maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like the power of this show, that it's not like the Big Bang Theory or, you know, Modern Family or even Glee, where people just kind of, you know, or even Doctor Who in the UK. Like everyone in the UK watches Doctor Who. Not everyone is like in the fandom and has seen filming pictures and all of that. Teen Wolf, it's a relatively small show. It only has like it's on cable, it's on MTV. It only has about 2 million viewers on average, and that's considered good for that network or something. And I feel like a very large majority of the people who watch Teen Wolf are people who are really into Teen Wolf, because people don't just casually watch that kind of stuff on, you know, you might have got a thrill out of it if you just flicked over and you sort of had seen a couple of episodes and then you're like, "Oh my God, Derek's dead." But the majority of people who follow, you know, Teen Wolf, I think, would know that Derek wasn't really gonna be dead. It's not something you could really shock people with. And if it is, you know, if they were intending that, they should have kept him out. you know, they should have not released anything about him in the future of the series, because, which I think would be way too difficult, but if you want us to feel the investment that the characters are feeling at that time, instead of just being like, yeah, that's not a thing, so can we just see how this all unfolds? Yeah, you have to sort of, I guess, if you don't want us to know that he's not really dead, then you have to sort of protect that a bit more.
Right, exactly. I think the whole thing with doing an episode like this, a flashback where you basically give away the ending at the beginning and then you sort of work your way back up to it, and by the time you reach the end of the episode, you get the ending again, but now you have, you know, all the information for how it led up to that point. You have to do the episode really, really well, because basically you gave away the ending. We already know what's going to happen. We have to be more invested in how it happened than what actually happened. And I don't think they really pulled that off in this episode. And I will preface this by saying that, you know, a lot of people thought that this episode was the best episode of Teen Wolf ever. And I get that. I totally get that. And we're definitely not hating on the show. I mean, this is my favorite show, and it actually pains me that I did not really enjoy this episode, but it's going to happen from time to time. And I think that maybe they got a little bit too ambitious with this episode, and it's not like it was bad, but I don't think it quite came off how they wanted it to.
No, I mean, I just don't get it. Like, I just don't get what we were meant to be caring about if they know that everyone knows that Derek is not dead, if you know what I mean. Like, if they, you know, are we meant to just be going, oh, Scott, how silly of you? Because I just don't get where the investment's meant to lie in this episode. That's it, basically.
I would have been more excited if the fight with the alphas had actually happened, like, at the end, and we were leading up to that the entire episode, like, in a straight linear sort of fashion. I think that would have been basically the same story, but I think it would have come off better if they had just kept it as a normal episode.
Yeah, potentially. Yeah, I was trying to think of how that could work, like, you know, plotting to go after them and then having the fight, and then I think that could have worked. And I mean, I think if that, you know, and then they could have potentially had the fallout from it the next episode, and if they could have carried on this, like, Derek's potentially dead for like two or three episodes. Though I suppose we did have that in the first season, so they have to avoid, you know, they saw him get stabbed and then start, you know, they thought he was dead and he wasn't in a couple of episodes. I guess they might have wanted to avoid doing that, but I just don't get how we were ever meant to think that Derek was dead, basically. And they made such a hype about an alpha will die and someone you love will die and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, it kind of reminds me of, like, the one episode of The Vampire Diaries that I've ever seen, which was, like, last, I guess this season or last season, my friend was watching it, and someone died in the middle of the episode, and she, like, burst into tears crying, and then they, like, came back to life by the end of the episode, and the guy knew that he was going to get killed, and it was all, like, a big, like, you watch the show, you might know what I'm talking about. And it was, like, nothing. Like, it was, like, dying kind of has to mean something, especially if you're going to hype it that much. I don't know. Anyway, I thought it was a good episode in terms of, like, character work for a lot of the characters, like Allison and Isaac, and, I mean, Scott as well, but especially for Allison and Isaac, I thought it was a big episode for, you know, some stuff about their characters and their self, but as a narrative, I wasn't really into it.
So following this scene with Scott and Stiles on the bus, we get Allison and Lydia together, and they're following the bus. And this part was actually pretty funny, because Allison basically doesn't want to let Scott out of her sight after what happened. And Lydia's kind of calling her on, you know, how sort of obsessed she is at the moment of keeping Scott safe. And Allison kind of just says, well, he started it. You know, he came over to my house. And Scott, basically we get another flashback, and Scott confronts Allison about her being at the school the other night, and this was kind of an interesting scene, because we get Scott saying, you know, I'm not accusing you of being there, whatever, but I just want to make sure you're safe, and He doesn't want anything to happen to her, and he wants her to be as afraid of the Alpha Pack as he is. And she says, oh, you know, I can take care of myself. And he kind of proves to her that she can't. I mean, she kind of throws a couple of punches and kicks at him, and he basically, you know, has her up against the door with her arm behind her back. And she, you can tell how frustrated she is at this point, because she did lose the hand-to-hand with him. I mean, if she doesn't have her bow, then she's going to be an inferior opponent if she's up against the Alpha Pack. And so I thought it was kind of a cute scene in the beginning, because they get close and you think they're about to kiss, but then they sort of back away. And then Allison kind of just does this 180, and she gets really quite angry at, I don't think she's angry at Scott. It comes
no,
off that way, but I think
she's just
more
like,
frustrated.
It's fine. She, you know, he apologizes for, you know, thinking he might have like hurt her arm or whatever. And she's like, no, it's fine. I get it. And she's just, I think, angry or frustrated or hurt that she isn't that capable and or is, you know, helpless, because she hates that. Like we've seen before, that she hates the idea that she might be helpless in this world and that she would, might be a little damsel in distress or something.
Right, and we already know that, you know, she hates the idea of feeling weak. She doesn't want to feel that way anymore. And I think after she found out about her family and she started her training and everything, she got this huge confidence boost. But I think that this was a good scene in that she needs that reality check, because if she's not careful, she could get killed. I mean, she doesn't have the healing capabilities that Scott does. So I'm glad it happened this way, even though it is sad to see her so frustrated and I guess weak. I wouldn't really say weak is really the word, because she's not. She is quite capable. But when you're going up against, you know, alpha werewolves, not a whole lot of people stand a chance.
Yeah. And then, you know, when Scott's on his way out, again, I got totally confused. And this is just like a slight lack of setup shots, I think. But, you know, he's in an elevator. And then Deucalion comes into the elevator, and I'm like, have we jumped to the hospital or something? What? And then he kind of goes to, and he's like, what are you doing here? And Deucalion's like, I live here. And it turns out Allison and her father are living in an apartment block, like a small apartment, which is cool. Like, that totally makes sense. They don't, might, you know, probably don't want to live in that house. They don't need a big house. They're not, you know, housing the entire hunting contingent of, you know, Beacon Hills. They're not got a garage full of weapons, whatever. But we haven't, like, had any throwaway line about them living in a different house or, like, an establishing shot of Scott going into an apartment building or something. So that super confused me for about 5 seconds. I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, no, this, I totally see why this makes sense, but you didn't play it in before now. So, yeah. So that was kind of weird.
Okay. It was, because basically there was no, yeah, like, it wasn't established that Allison and her father were living, and Scott comes in the next scene and says, oh, Deucalion's living in the same place the Argents are, and I'm like, wait, he's living in their house? Like, it was really confusing.
Yeah, I was like that as well. I was just like, hang on, they're living in an apartment. Oh, yeah, no, okay, this, right, I got you. But it was, like, a slight little bit of confusion that maybe didn't need to be there if we'd had, like, you know, 30-second or 10-second establishing shot of, like, Scott walking into an apartment building, or a line, you know, in the scene saying something about your new place or whatever. Because Allison's bedroom kind of looked different, but I figured she should have decorated it. I thought that already. I thought her bedroom looked different. But I thought, oh, maybe they've just redecorated from the, you know, insanity that was before or whatever, seeing as she had a nice room and then she trashed it and then she went back from that. So maybe she wants some sort of happy medium. But, yeah, definitely noticed the room, but, as I said, didn't realise it was a different place, even though it sort of makes sense. I also can't really work out why they're living in the same building as the Argents. Like, what, you know, are they seeing the Argents as the biggest threat, or are they, like, trying to rile up Scott? Like, is, you know, it's not a coincidence.
Well, Deucalion said he really liked the apartment building and the neighbors were nice, so maybe it is a coincidence.
He's telling the truth. Yeah, let's just go with that. but, yeah, it was just a bit odd. And basically, Scott takes that information about Deucalion and the Alpha Pack living there to Derek and Cora and Peter and whoever else is there, And they apparently already know about this. Don't know when or how they worked it out or why they didn't tell Scott, but they already know, and they're planning a preemptive strike on to go after the Alphas first, and Derek decrees that Scott is going to help them. So that's kind of the end of the first flashback, I think.
Boyd and Cora, I believe it was, followed the twins, and that's how they found out where they lived.
Okay, yeah. That makes sense, I guess. I don't know why they didn't tell Scott, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, especially when Derek just says, "You're gonna help us, you know."
Yeah, I think that was one of the things about this episode that I'm just like, too many little things didn't quite make sense, if you know what I mean. And usually they're pretty good at
Yeah.
covering everything and making it all make sense.
So we cut back to the scene on the bus, and we get more coach here, and we actually get Jeremiah, who is the walk-on role winner for this season. And I don't know about you, but I thought he was really, really great. He was so funny. He was the kid who was gonna puke on the bus, Jared, I think his name was. And coach kept saying, "Oh, don't throw up, don't throw up." And he's like, "If you keep talking about it, I'm going to." And coach was all, "I'm an empathetic vomiter," and everything.
It's
And
like, I might
I
throw
thought they
up
had
on
a
you to make
really
a point.
great, yeah. I thought it was a really great back and forth between the two, and he did a really great job making it seem like he was really, really queasy.
Yeah, no, it was a very, very nice element to the episode, that like a very funny episode. Coach just kills me, and if I was having a walk-on role on Teen Wolf, if I wasn't going to, be having it with Styles, it would be pretty fun to have it with Coach.
Yeah, and the lucky kid got both, so there you go.
Yeah, good times. It's cool that these roles are kind of like comedy roles, the roles that have been won so far.
Yeah, and they're like, could have been like a single line, like, "Hey, what's going on?" And then, they're gone. But they actually have a little bit of a significance, and both him and Chantel always do a really fantastic job from what we've seen so far, and I really enjoy that they do this. I hope they keep doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely like drove the plot, like his role, obviously, because they used his illness to
Yeah.
kind of have a plot point, and it makes, I'm not sure if that was like a role that like already existed when the episode was scripted, and then they were going to be like, okay, so that's where that person's going to go, whoever it's going to be, or if that was something they were going to cast like a normal actor for, and then they were like, oh, we could give them that, or they structured it around that, but it actually did drive the plot, the role, so that's really cool.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely agree. So this was just a really quick thing, and this is really hard to talk about because we keep going back and forth, so it feels like we're all over the place, but this is actually in order of how the episode went. But it flashes back to the scene where they're all around the map and they're trying to figure out how they're gonna attack the Alpha Pack, well, Deucalion specifically, and basically, it was just a really quick snippet, but Cora does not like Scott at all. She calls him a kid, and like, why do we need this kid? And Derek sort of shuts her down and says, "Hey, this kid saved your life." And I just really like Derek came to Scott's defense.
Yeah. Cora's not really. She just seems really angry and mean all of the time. I mean, I don't know what she has going on, if she's just like, ooh, I thought I was going to be like with my family and all I've got's you. And I don't know if like they didn't like each other to start with or something. It was interesting to hear her mention Laura when, later on when, Peter's like, hey, it's me. It's me. It's Uncle Peter. And she's like, yeah, Uncle Peter who killed Sister Laura. Which was kind of funny, but like her dynamic with Peter really interested me later in the episode. Like, I feel like their relationship might be one that is quite interesting, but so far she's not doing much for me. She's just, yeah, being mean pretty much.
Yeah, it's definitely not where I thought they were going to take the character. I kind of thought she would be this little innocent sister that Derek has to take care of, and that she really looks up to her big brother and she wants to help, but she can't for, whatever reason. Like, he wants to protect her and keep her home. And it's just really not how it turned out at all. And not that that's a bad thing. I'm definitely interested to see where she's going, but Yeah, in terms of whether or not I like her very much, it's definitely not there for me yet, but maybe she'll surprise us by the end of these first 12 episodes.
Yeah. The next bit is actually back to the present day, where Allison and Lydia are in the car, and Lydia realizes that Allison has brought her along to also keep an eye on her because Allison basically confronts Lydia about having relations with Aiden, the other werewolf twin who is not currently present. And it's very interesting to me that Lydia kind of denies it, but in her own little sort of flashback, we see that they are hooking up. And it's interesting to me that Lydia would go there knowing that the person is a werewolf. I mean, she was with Jackson, and then Jackson became a Kanemar and a werewolf, and presumably, I don't know how long they were together after he became a werewolf in that 4 month gap, but it was just interesting to me that she would actively go after someone who she knows is on, like, Team Bad Guy, or, does she know about, she knows about the
Yeah.
Alpha Pact now, at least. Allison was like, "You weren't there. You didn't see what happened." So clearly, she knows about what happened. She knows it's a thing, and it was interesting to me that she'd go after Aiden. This isn't my thing. I mean, I did notice it, but I didn't think about it like this. One of our Twitter followers, Ev, whose Twitter username is Defining Random, actually pointed this out, which was that. Even though Aiden is like big bad guy Alpha Pack, willing to kill people and mess stuff over, when they're hooking up and Lydia says to him, "Your hands," and he's like, "Yeah," and she's like, "They're on my waist," he immediately takes his hands off her and backs up in a like, "Am I doing something wrong?" Like, in a kind of
Right.
like, do you know what I mean? Like, in,
Yeah.
and I'm like, and she pointed out, and I agree. I'm like, does that show that you're like inherently like a good person, if you know what I mean? Like that because I'm all about the twins like turning around, and I think that they will, or at least one
Yeah.
of them will. And I just totally like love that like it's a shades of grey thing again. It's like you may be on like what's currently the thing that's like the antagonists, but like how much are the Alpha Pack really antagonists? Deucalion is, but by the end of the episode, we see that like. His sort of pack may not really be down with him and his choices either. Like, they, may be sticking together for power and stuff, but they're not exactly mindless killers. They're a bit power hungry, but they're not mindless killers. And yeah, it just, that kind of little aspect of like the human being that you are is apparently good and respectful is interesting to me.
Yeah, me too. I am totally on board with the idea of at least one of the twins turning good, hopefully two. As the episodes go on, I'm just really starting to like them more and more. So if they turn out to be like totally evil, it's gonna kind of crush my soul a little bit. But I sort of have to wonder, like, what do the pack think they're doing in Beacon Hills? Do they actually think they're the good guys? I mean, like you said,
They
there are some
might.
shades of gray here because they are attacking, huh?
They might think they're the good guys.
That's what I'm thinking because I mean, like you said, he backs up, so it's clear that he has some morals, unless he really is just that manipulative and he's just trying to show her that he has that side to him, but I'm not so sure. And so I just kind of have to wonder if the Alpha Pack's just doing what Deucalion is doing and Deucalion isn't telling them the whole story.
Yeah, the thing at the end, I'm pretty sure I would agree with that theory. Like that he's maybe, I think maybe that they think that they're a proper pack and a family and that they care about each other and that they don't maybe realize till now or didn't realize till now that Deucalion does not really care about them, if you know what I mean. This is more
Yeah.
very evident towards the end, but yeah, we'll continue on, I suppose.
One thing I really want to say about this and Aiden scene is that I really, really want Lydia to be up to something. I mean, she knows that Aiden is an Alpha Pack member. She knows exactly who he is. And I really want her to be the one manipulating him and trying to get information or trying to get close to him so that, he'll pass things along to her or something like that. I think that would be really, really great to see her in that
Yeah,
role.
it would be really cool. Going on from there, the bus kind of pulls up, basically. The bus is stuck in a big traffic jam, and we sort of see Isaac checking his phone, like I guess traffic report on the phone, saying that there's a jackknife trailer up ahead, like, a couple of miles, and it was all backed up. And Boyd basically starts turning, on the bus. He starts losing control, and turning on the bus. And then there is another flashback of, again, it's pretty linear, the flashbacks as well. It's picking right up of Deucalion and Scott talking in the elevator for Allison's building. Scott's kind of like, "Why are you doing this?" And Deucalion's like, "I want to see what you're made of." And, Scott's all like, "No killings." And Deucalion says, kind of tests him by saying, "The only way to protect one person. Sometimes the only way to protect one person is to kill another," which is kind of what made me think that like them staying in the apartment block is like a way of goading Scott. Like if you take the first episode and that the Megan Tandy's character and you say oh the Alpha not Hale McCall and that we think Scott is this chosen one. If this whole thing is actually about getting to Scott or taking whatever power Scott has or something like that, then I feel like them staying in Allison's place is like goading Scott in some way.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it is really hard to think of that as a coincidence. I mean, given that the only hunters in town, I believe that we know of, I don't really know if the other ones have up and left or whatever, but I mean, the Argents are kind of a big deal. And for the Alpha Pack to be directly over the top of them is kind of strange. So, and I mean, Deucalion's super intelligent, super manipulative. He knows a lot about Scott, I think, even more than he's been letting on. And I think he knows the connection that Scott has with Allison. So
Yeah.
he could just be setting himself up to be in a prime position.
Yeah, I think so as well. So the next flashback, which is Cora and Peter, is not linear, it's after the entire fight. And basically, that was the bit that I mentioned with him being like, "Oh, it's me, trust me, I'm Uncle Peter." And she's like, "Who killed Sister Laura?" Which was kind of weird. Weirdly delivered line. But it seems like neither of them trusts the other one. And their dynamic is sort of the only thing interesting to me about Cora right now. But basically, they go down to investigate where allegedly, the place they were fighting looks like a totally abandoned mall. Which I'm like, how does a whole mall get abandoned in California? Like, this isn't Detroit. Like, what? Like, is this a thing that happens? Like, it. How did they find an abandoned mall
I don't
set?
know.
Like, anyway, they fall down into the escalators, apparently, the Ennis and Derek, and basically the other Hales go to check it out, and basically they're like, "Where did the bodies go? And, did they get up out of, walk out of here, or which one was able to get up and walk out of here?" Basically, the bodies of Ennis and Derek, who we'd sort of seen lying dead, deadish, are both gone. So that would be a sign that they're probably not dead.
Yeah, you would think so.
That's fine, whatever. So there's that flashback, which, as I said, yeah, the only really interesting thing about it to me is the dynamic between Cora and Peter and where that has the potential to go, and if they'd kind of end up in like a weird trust thing at the end, like, kind of like if they'd end up with like, some weird thing where they come out of it trusting each other.
Yeah, I agree that Cora, really the only thing she's got going for her right now is this relationship with Peter. And I like that, obviously nobody really trusts Peter given what he did. But considering that, Peter speaks the truth when he says there's 6 years that are unaccounted for. I don't know what you've been up to. I don't know if you're in Deucalion's pocket. I mean, he doesn't say that specifically, but that's basically his intention. And I'm like, I'm glad that he's bringing this up because the fandom's pretty much wondering the same thing. And it's kind of laying that extra layer of doubt out for us. And we're definitely going to be wondering what exactly Cora is up to. So I'm glad that Peter, he's obviously still sort of the bad guy. He's in that gray area like a lot of the other ones are. We don't know if we can really trust him, but he's kind of flipping the tables and saying, you know, hey, I don't trust this girl either. So it's cool to see both sides of him there.
We don't know what he, you know, what he's out for at the moment, but yeah, I mean, if he doesn't trust Cora because he thinks Cora is, you know, a tool of Deucalion, then we'd hope for now that he's at least trying to be helpful to our pack.
So basically, we jump back to Boyd wolfing out on the bus. Scott gets up to stop him, and we sort of get this voiceover of Scott asking Deaton, what am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to stop them, meaning Derek's pack? And Deaton basically tells him, don't stop them, lead them. And then we get back to Scott, and he basically tells Boyd to stop, and he's like, what's your plan? Tell me your plan, and I'll let you do whatever you want. And it's obvious that Boyd doesn't have a plan. What was really interesting here to me was that Boyd actually listens to Scott and calms down. I mean, we've seen the effect that Scott has on Isaac, and Isaac listens to him pretty well. But Boyd's always been sort of the rogue. He's always been the one to kind of do whatever he wants to. He's been a lot more angry than some of the other ones recently. And yet he stops when Scott tells him to.
I was surprised that he submitted to Scott or like listened to him, either the human or wolf part of him listened to Scott so well as well. But the way that Scott is talking to them is so, it's so leadery. Like it is so, and it's just making me wonder, and a few things are making me wonder if people can become an alpha purely by acting like one. Because I can't imagine, you know, as we've said, we think that Scott's whole journey is going to be because of, you know, becoming an alpha, and we don't think that he's necessarily going to kill someone, so, you know, and he's not going to inherit it from anyone else. So it just seems a bit odd that he could potentially like be taking on the qualities and characteristics of an alpha purely by choice and situation, purely by being like that, purely by, and it makes me wonder if that's his whole, like, you know how he's like the chosen one, like Harry Potter, Luke Skywalker or whatever. Maybe his whole thing is like that he's the only person ever to become an alpha just by being one, if you know what I mean.
I mean, I don't know if he's going to be the only person to kind of go along that path, but we do know that there are two ways to become an alpha. They didn't get into the specifics, but I think one of them is obviously killing another alpha, sort of replacing them in that way, or if they get killed, you're the next one in line. And I think what's going to happen to Scott, and this sort of backs up the theory that he's not going to end up killing anybody else, but I think that he's going to choose to become an alpha. And on top of that, I think people like Isaac and Boyd and maybe some of the others are going to choose to have him as their alpha. Like maybe at some point they have to take sides and they decide to go with Scott. And I think that's what's going to kind of bump him up into that leadership position and allow him to become an alpha, which I think is really great because, for one, it means that Scott doesn't have to kill anybody, which is nice for him to not have to do that. But also, it's a good journey considering where he started in season one and how hesitant he was about being a werewolf and how he just didn't really fit in anywhere, and now he's taking on this huge leadership role. People are looking up to him. He's making really good decisions, even if they're sort of ideal. You know, I mean, who knows if they're going to be able to get out of this mess without a lot of people dying, but I like the fact that they've chosen this path for Scott.
Do you think that if he does choose to become an alpha, there will have to be a ceremony with robes?
Like the betas and candles.
Yeah. And he might have to pledge on like the
Possibly.
werewolf book of werewolfitude. These are the kind of questions Styles should be asking, really.
Yes.
But anyway, Moving on swiftly from that. No, I do think that I do feel like that he will become an alpha purely by attitude and people's dedication to him and that kind of thing, and that should be interesting.
Yeah, definitely, I agree.
The next part of the plan, once they're, back in today's world on the bus, is that Stiles decides he needs to find out why Ethan keeps checking his phone, why he keeps, every couple of minutes, what's up, what's up? And, Ethan sort of told Danny, oh, I'm waiting for a message, but they're being all very playful and flirty and stuff. But he's sort of very manically checking his phone, and Stiles decides to try and find out why, because thinks that might, try and work out what's happened. And basically, he starts texting Danny, and it's ridiculous. And basically, and Danny just turns around and looks at him, being like, what? No. And, it makes me wonder, what the hell does Danny think is going on? Like, why would it be important? Like, Stiles' excuse, come on, it's important, just find out. And if Danny is not in the loop at all, what on earth does he think is going on? Like, how could this possibly be important to Stiles, But, and he just keeps being like, no, I really like this guy, you're acting like a freak. And again, I'm loving the Stiles and Danny dynamic, and I love that, and I loved that, like, at the, beginning, both of them, like Scott and Stiles, are both like, I don't like that he's sitting next to Danny. And if they love Danny so much, why don't they just marry him? I mean, well, no, but why don't they just, if they love Danny so much, why don't they just tell him what's going on so he knows and it can be safe? Like, do you think between like Jackson and himself being attacked by the Kanama, all of those things, like, do we think Danny really knows nothing?
I mean, he's got to be pretty curious in the very least, especially given, was it the last episode where Stiles was like, oh, I need to have sex, someone needs to sex me
Yeah,
right now.
Danny's
Does,
like, I'll
like,
sex you,
does he
yeah.
think, yeah, does Danny think that Stiles is going after Ethan now, or like, is that his intended target or something? I don't know. I mean, Danny's around a lot, and between the video, like you said, with Jackson and being attacked by the Kanama and all this other stuff, I mean, he's got to think something else is going on. He's not dumb. He's not a dumb character at all. So he's got to be wondering, but does he actually know the truth that werewolves exist? I don't really think so, but yeah, things are
No,
definitely
maybe.
weird in Beacon Hills.
Okay, this is going to come up a little bit later, because Jennifer Blake isn't in this episode till right at the end, but apparently there's a theory kicking around Tumblr that she might be an alpha, because apparently they can disguise their scent if they're not in werewolf form, so you would never know in human form who might be the alpha, who might be an alpha, which I don't know about. I've never really thought that in relation to her, but we know Danny's name is important. What if he's a werewolf? What if he's been an alpha, this like peaceful, and he like his last name is like Hawaiian. Maybe he's just been like this really chill, peaceful islander werewolf who's like, I'm just gonna live here and just be chill and like not get involved in any of this and like whatever and just never change. Like he's so zen and cool that he never like changes. And so that he's just sitting there the whole
Yeah.
time going, oh my God, are you kids? Is this real? Like, are you for real? And he's just known everything the whole time because he's like this totally blissed out Zen alpha who just doesn't want to be involved.
Yeah, no, this is exactly what I said on the last episode because there was this thing going around Tumblr was like, guys, what if Danny is already a werewolf and one day he just like wolfs out and he turns to Scott and all the others and he's like, you guys are just so bad at being werewolves. I think that would be hilarious if he's been a werewolf this entire time. That would be
Just,
so funny.
I mean, because they said his name was important, and I was kind of like, I don't know how that would work, except that the person talking about Ms. Blake, it came up that in the first season they were like, oh, alphas, they can disguise their scent or cover up their scent in human form. So they may never know who, he might not be a beta, but if he was an alpha, he totally could. Like, that totally would be. Can that please be the reveal of like the last the end of season three, like the second half of season three? Like please, please, I would love it. Anyway, point is, Danny is like, what the hell is Stiles? But then when Stiles like literally manically starts like just texting him like dots and smileys and So his phone is, like, constantly going off, and Ethan is just like, what the hell? Danny actually does his ask. Like, he actually, you know, I would just turn my phone off. I would just be like, Styles, go away. But clearly he believes in some way this is important, because he tries to find out from Ethan and text back to Styles, someone close to him is sick or, you know, in hospital or something, might not make it through the night. Which we find out is genuinely pretty close to the truth. So it's, again, it's interesting that Ethan would tell Danny the truth, basically. Not the whole truth, but a lot of the truth. Because we see a flashback of Carly, Aiden, and our best friend, Miss Morell, bringing a very beaten-up Ennis to Dr. Deaton's office. And they have this whole interaction of, you know, can you save him? And Deaton's just like, you know what? No, please leave. And basically Morell talks him into it by being like, if he dies, Deucalion's going to come after your kids and it's all going to be... And she looks really desperate. Like, she looks... I don't know if it's all an act, but she looks really... She looks like she's in, like, way over her head, like that she's a servant of these people and it's not really what she believes is right. So that's another aspect of her that's a bit confusing.
I was wondering if it was that or if she was actually trying to protect the kids, that, you know, she was saying, look, if Ennis dies, they're going to go after Scott, and that she actually doesn't want Scott to die at all, which is kind of funny considering the fact that she closed off the circle when they were in the bank vault. But it's, yeah, she's so confusing. I really do not know what is going on with her right now.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're all going behind Deucalion's back at this point. I mean, maybe at that point with the circle that they were, she was sort of doing the job that she thought she had to do. Maybe she's like, maybe if this whole, like, druid thing is tied in, that she's sort of indebted in servitude, like that she has to do certain things, and but I don't know, I can't work her out basically. But, you know, basically, yeah, she ends up talking Deaton into saving Ennis for the sake of keeping the peace or whatever. And, you know, the others, the fact that Ethan is so concerned and the fact that Aiden and Carly took him there, it's sort of those four at least are very, they care, like they care about each other, and, you know, enough for Ethan to be anxious, enough for the others to bring him there behind Deucalion's back and all of that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny because this is actually the very first time that I felt like they were real people. I know that kind of doesn't make sense because obviously they are people, but like I felt bad for them. And the three of them with Ennis sort of hanging in the middle, I mean, he's always been very intimidating because he's a giant guy, but he was on the brink of death. And even Kali is very scary looking, and they were genuinely worried about him. And I actually felt bad and was like, oh my god, I kind of hope Deaton does help them and help save Ennis, even though I know, you know, there are villains for this first part of the season.
Yeah. And I mean, maybe Deaton sort of, you know, them owing Deaton this debt may be what ends up turning them or some of them around against Deucalion. But I wouldn't be surprised, actually, given what happens at the end with Carly, if all three of them, the rest of the other three alphas, if it ends up everyone against Deucalion, if you know what I mean, or whatever ends up happening. Though something was mentioned towards the end that also confused the hell out of me. So, yeah. Styles, basically, Scott is getting a lot worse with his wound. Like, he pretty much can't keep it together, the wound that's not healing. And Styles basically tries to find a way to make the bus stop so they can go to, like, a rest stop or something, and just to get Scott off the bus to, you know, so that Allison and Lydia can get in there and try and help him or get him out of there. And he, you know, he's kind of asking, you know, to go into a service station, like, you know, to get food, and then he's like, you know, can we go to the bathroom? And Coach is being, like, quite, like, I'd say, like, if the whole bus was like, we need to go to the bathroom, they should probably stop. But he basically really argues with Coach, and this sort of goes on a little bit over a few scenes, but the sort of the final one is basically him trying to talk to Coach, and basically every time he opens his mouth, the Coach is, like, blowing a whistle at him without talking. And it's really funny, but it's also, like, incredibly obnoxious of the Coach. You know, and I don't know,
yeah,
just that, you know, I don't know if it's just that he thought that Styles was being like a troublemaker or whatever, but he really was not being all of that reasonable. Like, if some kid is like, I really need to go to the bathroom and this, you know, bus journey is 5 hours long, you should probably let them. He was being kind of obnoxious. But Styles basically ends up, like, you know, he yells at, you know, Styles to get back to his seat, and Styles sort of yells back, like, okay, and similar to the way that when, like, Lydia was like, I'm supposed to call you first when I found a dead body, and he's like, yes, which shows that Styles is kind of getting frustrated pretty easily, like, well, not pretty easily, but, like, he's kind of, the title of the episode is Frayed, and I feel like a lot of people's nerves are getting frayed, and I feel like Styles is one of them. Like, he's, you know, he's pretty isolated, and he's trying to basically fix everything. He's trying to fix everything that no one else is paying attention to. Everyone's like, oh, alphas, and he's like, human sacrifices, this is kind of a thing. Hey, yeah, no. And now he's kind of trying to deal with all of that at once, and he's the only person with sort of a, you know, a finger in each pie or whatever, you know. He's the only one, you know, really putting mental energy into everything that's going on. And so it, you know, it seems to actually sort of be wearing on him a bit, and he just seems to be losing his cool. Not losing his cool, you know, it's not even unreasonable, because the coach was being pretty awful, but he used to be better at being manipulative, I guess. I mean, we do see that he is quite manipulative still with what he pulls, but he used to be better at keeping a front up. And this season, he's sort of snapping a bit more. Which is, you know, hopefully doesn't get too bad. I hope we don't deal with a total Styles breakdown, because I can't watch that. You'll just have to get someone else on the episode that week, because I'm just like, yeah, I'm not watching that. not happening. All right. But the point is, he sort of sits down, and then he kind of looks at Jared, the guest star, Jeremiah, and kind of comes up with a plan where he goes over to him and he's like, so, Jeremiah, and basically gives him this very mean, crazy smile, which is one of the scariest things I've ever seen. And people keep doing things with the still of that, like making like them like flash, or like, you know, posting the pictures in like patterns and circles of just like close-ups of Styles' face doing that face. And I'm just like, make it stop. It's horrible.
It's quite terrifying, actually.
Yeah, it's really weird. But anyway, it's basically the sign to show that he is going to make Jared throw up everywhere, so the bus has to stop, which does end up happening. He manages to get the bus to stop, you know, because everyone is grossed out or empathetically vomiting themselves, and they manage to stop the bus.
Yeah, and then, so basically, the bus pulls over into the rest stop, and Lydia and Allison get out, and those two, Scott and Styles, all go into the bathroom, and Scott is not healing, and Lydia sort of figures out that it's actually all in his head. He feels so guilty about Derek's death that he's not actually allowing himself to heal. And so Lydia suggests stitching him up, because she figures if he sees that he's healing, that maybe it'll break whatever's going on inside of his head, and his body will actually kind of take charge and start the healing himself.
I'm not sure I really understood her whole theory about it being, like, psychosomatic or whatever. Like, is that a thing that can happen? I mean, I guess it is. Like, maybe that's going to be a plot point for later in the season or something, but I was really confused by that. And it makes me wonder if, you know, I wonder if that's related to Peter taking so long to heal from his burns as well, or if he was just that badly damaged, because we know fire is pretty bad for werewolves, like, that, you know, they had the whole, like, that fire sort of gets to them, you know, that, you know, fire may create scar tissue that doesn't heal, because they, you know, put fire on Scott's tattoo and stuff, but, you know, it did take a long time for Peter to heal, so I don't know if that's anything to do with that. But in general, like, it's a pretty random theory to just come up with.
It's definitely a possibility. Like, I could see that happening, that they feel so guilty that they don't want to heal. And I don't think that, I mean, Scott obviously wants to live, and he wants to keep healing and get better, but I think subconsciously he just feels so bad about what happened that he's sort of like, what's the point? You know, Derek's gone, like, he was the alpha, blah, blah, blah. And so I think just deep down inside of him, he really didn't want to come back from it because everything's getting so crazy and it'd be easier just to give up.
What I want to know is if they thought Derek was really dead, surely the sign that Derek isn't really dead is that one of the others didn't become an alpha.
True.
Unless they thought Jackson was his, and they didn't mention it, unless they thought, oh, the next person in line in Derek's pack is Jackson because Jackson was the first person he bit. But surely Cora would be because she was in the family. And so it would pass to her. Like,
right.
It doesn't make any sense. To me, I'm like, surely the sign that if he's properly dead is that you is now has inherited the alphaness. But that didn't even come
up. Yeah,
that's
like, a good point.
I was surprised that didn't even come up, you know. I was surprised they wouldn't be like, oh, we wouldn't know either way because Jackson is the one who's would be the next one or whatever. But I don't know if he would be. I feel like that's too much of a... I don't know. That aspect just kept coming to me. I'm like, well, if he's dead, shouldn't someone be the alpha now? Like, so that confused me a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not really sure why they didn't bring that up. Like you said, there's a lot of little things in this episode that just keep... We have a lot of questions about that I feel like should have been answered, and they weren't. So
yeah,
just add that one to the list, I guess. So I really want to talk about this next part of this scene in the bathroom, because this was actually my favorite scene in this episode. And I think this in particular kind of bumped the quality of the episode up a bit, I think, because we see Allison trying to thread the needle and be able to stitch Scott up, and she's completely freaks out. She just has a total breakdown, and she ends up seeing her mother again, and Victoria is there saying, you know, what are you doing? Like, you can do this, but she's very mean. She tells Allison to stop crying, to, you know, and she says, what do I always say? And she's like, approach it clinically without emotion. And Allison's just completely breaking down. But then finally, she kind of comes up to her. Victoria comes up to Allison and says, you know, just breathe. And Allison sort of calms down and she's able to thread the needle.
Yeah, I mean, that the bit that really got to me was like, when she was like, how do we approach things like this? And Allison was like, clinically, it just makes me wonder how many times before that she'd heard that, especially given that she's only known about the werewolves and stuff for a year. And I don't know if it's just like been her mother's attitude her whole life, if it's like with skinning her knee on a bike, or if it's like, you know, I don't know, maybe they went out and killed their own chickens for dinner or something. I don't know, but like, just the way that she said it seemed like such a, you know, something that she'd heard so many times, so that was kind of interesting to me. Also, if that aspect of Victoria kind of, if Allison saw that aspect of Victoria in her personality, you know, long before she knew about the werewolves, because to us it always kind of seemed like Victoria was kind of nice and slow spoken and smiling, and then she found, you know, when we knew that she was in on the werewolves, that was when we saw her sort of crazy velociraptor side. But I'm just wondering if she was always like that about everything with Allison, because that's something we didn't really see.
I have a feeling she was that way, that this smiley sort of slow spoken, like you said, front was just that, a front. I mean, because I don't really see her coming off that cruel and that sort of crass around other people. I mean, even when she interacts with Melissa in the hospital after she like slices her arm open, she doesn't act the way she does at home.
No.
And so I think Allison knew the real side of her, but it really only became apparent to us once we found out that she was in on the whole werewolf thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I could definitely see that being something that Victoria has said over and over again to Allison.
Yeah, it did sound like that. And I mean, you have the question of why Allison is seeing her mother like this as sort of an, you know, almost as like an anchor, like, or if she's just imagining it. If it is real, like we've said, people don't usually hallucinate things in Teen Wolf, and like we don't usually see them really right there, you know, in the hallucination if they're not real in some way, like, you know, like Peter, you know, like young Peter Hale and all of that kind of thing. We don't usually see people just imagining things, and it's just that's all it means, that they're imagining it. You know, and I don't know if it just started out with Alison being like, oh my God, my mother would think I'm so pathetic, and then her mind turning it around to what her mother would, you know, be like comforting her, or whether the whole thing was sort of a positive for, you know, for Alison, whether it started out as whether, you know, her mother's encouragement, be it the harsh type or the soft type, whether it was always the whole time like a positive, or whether it was like, oh, I'm upset and this is so much worse, and then her mother sort of took over to comfort her, and whether, again, whether that's just Alison imagining it or how she wished it had have been, or whether it is some sort of ghost or whatever.
Yeah, I have a really hard time thinking that Alison is just imagining it, because it's so real. I mean, she's talking to her like she's there. She's actually seeing her, and it doesn't really feel like, I mean, obviously it's in her mind. We know that Victoria is dead. It's not real. But it could have been, like, solved, this whole thing about her trying to calm down and that sort of thing, through a fat flashback. This episode is full of flashbacks. Why didn't we just flashback to Alison and Victoria, where Victoria was telling her, through some other event, you have to approach this clinically,
and then we kind of come to the present day and she's just like, clinically, like, can you just see her sort of that?
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened. That's not what happened here. We actually see Alison interacting with this ghost of a mother that she has, and I don't know if Allison's literally just going crazy or if something else is going on here. And I have to wonder too, does Alison feel like she's going crazy, or does this feel kind of normal to her? We haven't really gotten her sort of being like, oh my God, what's going on? I'm talking to my mother, I'm seeing her, that sort of thing. It's been all very kind of normal for her, and that's a little surprising. So I wonder if she either doesn't really grasp the whole kind of reality of what's going on, or if maybe this just really is all in her head and nothing else is going on.
I just can't take it like that, given the way that they've used that kind of thing before. I just can't take it like that. I don't know. Maybe we're seeing too much into it, but it's just not what they do.
Right, yeah. It was funny because I watched this episode twice, and the second time around, I started crying, like, violently during this scene.
Really?
And the first time I didn't. Like, it didn't bother me at all. Yeah. But this time I was just like, especially when Victoria came up to her and was starting to be a bit nicer and was trying to, like, coach her through it and tell her to just breathe, I just, yeah, I lost it.
Yeah, it was definitely the best scene. And again, that was Jeff in his Q&A said that this was his favourite scene. So if this was his favourite scene, he clearly knew what he was doing. So I'm sure that this Victoria thing is going to have some sort of, it's not just, Alison remembers her mother. This is a plot point. Like, it's going to be a thing.
Yeah, I agree.
The next flashback involved, basically, we see Scott basically at his house, sort of getting on his bike and, or getting his bike helmet and sort of preparing to go out. And again, we don't really know why. I mean, it's to do with Deaton being like, lead them. And basically he has this whole like standoff with Isaac, you know, Isaac's like, so where are you going? And Scott's like, oh, I'm going to get food. He's like, oh, why aren't you taking me with you, Scott? Come on. Hey, and they kind of, Isaac kind of knows what he's doing and insists on going with him. They didn't really say, oh, I'm going to do this. And he keeps saying, Isaac, I can eat alone. And Isaac's like, no, I'm going to come get food with you. And they basically go off on the bike to go confront the Alpha Pack, which I'm not sure how they really got there. Like, I mean, physically they got there on the bike. I don't mean like that. I mean, I just don't know how Scott got like, oh, yeah, okay, what we're going to do is I'm going to go without telling Derek. Does he think he can talk them all out of it or something if Derek's not there? Or find out what they want? I don't know what he was trying to achieve, but basically it doesn't go so well because the others show up anyway when Scott tries to talk to Deucalion. And did I miss how Derek and that knew they were there? Did Isaac tell?
No, I don't think so.
I didn't think that either.
I think Derek just knew that Scott would do that to try to talk him out of it because he really wasn't in on the plan to begin with. So they were probably just keeping an eye on him and then decided that, you know, he was already going to be there, so they should show up too, and that'll sort of force Scott into fighting. But this scene, okay, first of all, Scott, worst liar in the world. I'm get Mexican? Like,
I'm gonna
I mean, you could
get
just totally see through
food.
what you say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Isaac, like, I was really confused the first time I watched this, and Isaac was being so creepy. Like,
Isaac
oh,
is
dude, I love
creepy
Mexican.
about
I'll go with
Scott.
you. No,
Isaac
no.
is obsessed with Scott. He's creepy about Scott. There's a reason people ship it so much. Like, he is so
Yeah.
puppyish about Scott, and it's sweet, but he's really, like, sad about, like, he's, the thing is, he's very dependent on Derek as well. Oh, just to bring this up, by the way, Jeff did confirm in the Q&A as well that moment where he threw the glass at Isaac's face was on purpose. It was because he knew his father, it was because he knew, and he was doing it specifically on purpose to trigger that horror in Isaac and get rid of him. So that's nice, Derek, thanks. Which I guess shows how much he wanted to protect Isaac, I guess, or thinks Isaac would be better off with Scott.
Yeah, in a roundabout kind of way.
It's not great. Anyway,
Yeah, but anyway, what I was saying was that it took me a while to figure out that Isaac and Scott weren't really talking about Mexican, that they were talking about going to visit Deucalion. Once I caught on, the scene got like a lot less creepy, but yeah, at first I was like, why is he so insistent on
Yeah, I mean,
staying with
again, that
Scott?
was
This is
it
weird.
wasn't yeah, that was the whole thing. I got that a little bit as well, and I'm like, and I'm not dumb. I know about subtlety. I can do subtle. But I was like, what? And it's because they didn't really set up very well that Scott, nothing that was said or set up really hinted that Scott would do that, basically. Like, I know that he didn't want to be involved at, or whatever, and I know that Deaton said, ooh, how do you save people that don't want to be saved? And Deaton's all like, lead them. But that didn't really, it still didn't really quite add up to like him being like, oh, I'm going to go off on myself and talk to Deucalion. Like, I didn't quite predict it because nothing was set up that way. And so I was like, is Isaac just being like, hey Scott, don't exclude me. Don't leave me alone. Just, I want food. I want to be your best friend. Scott, hey Scott. Hey, Scott, I want to come. And so I don't know, like, I just for a minute I was like taking it like that, and then I was like, and the way Scott people being like, I can eat alone. It's like, oh, do you really hate Isaac? Why do you not want him to come get Mexican food with you? I mean, I didn't think they were really. It just, I don't know. It was, I liked the scene, and I know what they were trying to do, but it wasn't
Yeah.
quite set up well enough. It wasn't quite set up well enough that that's what Scott was gonna go do. So, yeah.
Yeah. Once I caught on to the meaning of the scene, I really enjoyed how Isaac was basically insisting on being there with Scott to protect him and to be his backup. I liked that a lot, but it was like before you got to that point, you were like, wow, this is just strange.
Yeah.
So yeah, then basically Derek and the others show up when Scott tries to talk to Deucalion, and everybody gets into a fight, and it's kind of crazy.
When Deucalion was like talking to them, and he was all like, "Ooh, you've brought people. Did you think I would cut a blind man would get into a place like this alone?" Number one, he needs to stop bringing up the fact that he's blind. He has like superhuman other senses. I'm pretty sure he's very capable. I'm pretty sure he's like fine, but. I would like to see how the blindness does actually affect him, but that wasn't the bit that annoyed me. The bit that actually annoyed me was when he said that, and then like Carly made her entrance, like sliding down the concrete pole. Was she just like poised at the top, like waiting for the line, like to like you know like is that like how like evil guys do things? They like sit out before and they're like, okay, so I'm gonna say this, and on this line you slide, and then it'll be really awesome. Is that what bad guys do?
Maybe. Oh my gosh. No, it reminds me of a Harry Potter sequel when Lucius Malfoy is like, okay, you guys stand over here by the boxes and then you do this like dance and it's gonna look
Exactly,
so
like it's
awesome.
gonna no, you're gonna feel really silly, but it's gonna look freaking sweet. Yeah, it's exactly like that's
Yeah.
is that what bad guys do? Like, is that seriously how it works? Because that's what Deucalion seems like. That's just how it seems.
I wonder if they have to take classes to know these things,
Like,
like,
okay,
okay.
yeah, I think so.
But anyway, besides, it was kind of ridiculous, but I really did like Kali's entrance. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, objectively, yes, but I'm just like really on the line. Like, it's really like, Like, you didn't want to just, like, walk up behind me or something, or, like, you know, like, you know, on the queue that shows that I'm not alone, you didn't want to just, like, come out and start attacking, like, you wanted to make a drink. Anyway, I just find that so funny and weird. Like, I know it's, like, for dramatic effect and, like, that probably doesn't happen like that in real life, but, you know.
Yes. Anyway.
They all fight.
Right, they all fight. And then, oh, this is actually really interesting to me, and I'll be very curious to hear what you think about it, because I have a pretty strong opinion on this. Mm-hmm. But we go back to real time, and Styles says that he's going to slow down Coach while Allison stitches Scott up, and after they get all out, Styles is off doing that, and Lydia says that that's where Styles is. And basically, we find out that Isaac is beating the crap out of Ethan because Styles told him what was going on, that Scott was still really hurt, and so Isaac basically attacks Ethan. So my question is, do you think Styles knew that Isaac would go after Ethan if he told him what was going on with Scott and that this was how he was going to slow Coach down to make sure the bus didn't leave without them?
I could see it. I didn't think of it, but I definitely wouldn't put it past Styles. Did he tell Isaac specifically? Is that, like, I can't remember. Like, did he actually go up to him and say that was what was going on with... Is that why Isaac was beating Ethan? I thought he just, like, snapped about Derek.
No, we didn't actually see the conversation between Styles and Isaac, but Lydia told Allison and Scott that that's what happened, and that's why Isaac was beating up Ethan.
Oh, God. Okay. Fair enough. I mean, I find it interesting that Ethan's just sort of sitting there laughing. Like, someone on the Tumblr, like, someone's met on the Tumblr said, like, those twins are so good at that, like, teenage, no, he did it kind of, like, shifting of the blame thing. And it's so true. Even if they weren't werewolves, they could get other people into so much trouble. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's plausible. I would never have thought of it, but I think it's plausible.
I really saw it second time around when I was watching the episode, and I was like, wait a second, they brought it up twice that Styles was going to slow down Coach and that he specifically talked to Isaac, and then Isaac started beating up Ethan. And we've talked before about Styles being the poison friend, about him willing to do things that Scott isn't, to get things done, and I don't know. I mean, I definitely could be wrong, but to me, it was very obvious that Styles knew exactly what was going to happen if he told Isaac what was going on.
No, I agree. I think I agree. Yeah. With the fight scene in the flashbacks, when they all fight and Scott tries to talk to Deucalion, had Allison showed up? How far into the fight does Allison show up?
It's after the Alpha Pack basically has everybody in a chokehold, and they pretty much don't know what they're going to do.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so the flashback that comes before that, or not the flashback, the flash sideways, I guess, like the what's going on with the Alpha Pack while the others are on the bus, is that Deucalion comes into Deaton's office to see Ennis, and, you know, Deaton's like, oh, he's probably going to live. And then Deucalion kills Ennis by literally squashing his head in with one hand after giving him this creepy-ass kiss, which is just like, oh, that... Okay, that seemed very ritualistic and, like, sacrificial. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, the very, like, you know, like almost like anointing. And so that kind of made me a bit weirded out, like, that he, like, you know, kissed him on both sides of his face and then squashed his head in. Yeah, that was somewhat unexpected. Like, I don't get what he gets out of that, except maybe Ennis's strength, if we know that it's transferred like that, like why he thought it was time for Ennis to die now, or is it so they could blame his death on the others? Like, I don't really understand why he did that.
Yeah, the only thing that I can think of is that he wanted Ennis to die to sort of kickstart his whole plan, and I don't think he cares about the Alpha Pack like each of the other members care about each other, because Kali was obviously very, very upset that Ennis had died, and I think even Aiden was, and we knew that Ethan was worrying quite a bit about him, so that was kind of a whole interesting point unto itself, but Deucalion killing Ennis is just there had to have been an ulterior motive there, and I think it was to just kickstart his master plan.
Yeah, I mean, that bit with Carly and Aiden at the end was the bit that really made me think that they might all turn against him, because she is horrified and devastated, and she kind of lets Aiden take her out the back, and, like, he lets her scream, but, like, holds her back, and she's letting him hold her back as well. Like, she's letting him hold her wrists while she kind of loses control, and then he sort of hugs her and stuff. So they clearly all love each other. And Deucalion don't love no one.
Pretty much. And so then do you think that, obviously, Deaton was the only one that saw Deucalion kill Ennis. So do you think that Kali and Aiden are under the impression that he died from his wounds?
No.
And that Deaton didn't tell them what
had
actually happened?
My impression was that they knew that Deucalion did it. I might be wrong. And maybe that'll be a thing later of being, maybe that'll be my mistake. And I'll be like, you know, it'll be some big reveal that was like, but Deucalion actually killed Ennis. Oh my God. As opposed to him just succumbing to his wounds. But my impression was that Carly and Aiden knew what had happened, like that they were there, or, you know, that they knew what had happened, not just that they got told he died. And that they were like too far deep to like rebel against Deucalion at this moment, but that they kind of like hated him or hated themselves for being a part of it now or something like that. My impression was that, but yeah. I might be totally wrong.
I could see that happening.
So in the actual fight, they get to the point where they have Boyd and Cora pinned, and basically Deucalion wants Derek to kill Boyd to kickstart his whole, like, kill all your betas and get their power and all of that. And he, you know, he says, kill Boyd and the others can go, and they have Cora pinned, and they're like, choose between pack and family, like, you know, like, if he doesn't kill Boyd, like, that they're gonna kill Cora. Just kill Cora. I don't care. No, that's mean. I do. Derek could probably care.
It took Derek a really long time. I mean, he didn't even end up deciding, like,
yeah,
Allison showed
up. Yeah, he was
up.
Just like, no, I don't
he
want
was
to.
Forever.
He wasn't like, oh my God, Cora, no, just, you know, he really, I mean, that's good, I guess, that, because it's a, I think a werewolf pack, like, becomes family. Like, you know, it does, I know that obviously the Hale pack was hereditary, but you'd think that a non-hereditary pack would become as close or closer than family. But I don't know, yeah, he did seem very, very torn. Like, he clearly didn't want that to happen to either of them, which is nice. And then Allison saves the day by coming in and, like, shooting flares. I'm like, what is she doing, like, exactly? But she clearly has, like, arrows that are, like, flints, like, that cause, you know, light sparks and stuff, and that it was disorientating everyone, and they all let go, and then they're all getting, you know, returned to the fight and getting knocked around. And basically the next big thing is that Scott's eyes turn, like, red, like kind of like an alpha, for a moment after he gets knocked back by Ennis. They turn red, and he... And then they go back to gold. And so that happens, you know.
Yeah, that was something, wasn't it?
Yeah, really a little bit odd.
My theory, yeah, just a little bit. My theory on that is that, because, I mean, everyone is obviously wondering why. Why in that moment did his eyes sort of flip to the red color? It was like kind of orange red. I don't know if that was on purpose or maybe it was just like the TV I was watching it on. I'm not sure. But, It's after he knocks into Ennis and then gets pushed back. He looks up and his eyes sort of flash red. Okay, so why in that moment exactly did his eyes flash red? And the only thing that I can think of is that he was sort of taking the fight on his shoulders. He was attacking Ennis. He was leading and probably hoping that the others would follow. I don't know. Did you have any other theories about that?
Not really, no. I mean, that works. I couldn't work out why in that moment, like, in rather than any others either. And then obviously the end of the fight, you know, Ennis and Derek are tackling each other and they both fall off the edge of the thing onto the escalators, and everyone's like, oh my God, they're both dead. Neither of them were dead. You guys suck. Like, you guys should have both run down there and be like, why didn't anyone from either pack go down there immediately and be like, oh, my friend, let me help you. Like, why did that not happen? Why?
I don't know.
Actually,
it was a really
the
long
alphas
walk.
Did the alphas did after, like, Scott and that ran away, because they took Ennis to Deaton. So our pack was just like, oh, Derek's dead. Oh, well, let's go. That's not very nice. But clearly neither were dead because, Ennis gets taken to the animal hospital and Derek we shall see momentarily. But before that, Lydia kind of brings this up with Styles. Like, she's sitting with Styles on the bus. Basically, her and Allison ditch the car at the rest stop and go back on the bus with the others for reasons. They ran out of gas, I think is what it was. And Styles is just like, she kind of knows about the sacrifices, and she says, sort of as an aside to Styles, that some ancient cultures sacrifice people in preparation for battle, and so it kind of seems like. And this is what I was like, oh, is this what's happening? Because I thought sort of both things were on the same side, but what it sounds like, what her and Styles' discussion there sounds like, is that there is a dark druid preparing to battle by doing sacrifices, preparing to battle the Alpha Pack. So that was not what I was expecting. Like, because I didn't think that there would be like two, Jeff is always like, I wouldn't do like two different stories, but like two different bad guys who are part of the same story is different. That's a whole nother ballpark or whatever. And yeah, I was just, did you get that? Like in that bit with Lydia and Styles? Because yeah, it seemed like what they were saying is that this dark druid, was potentially sacrificing people in preparation for battle, not, potentially with the Alpha Pack, as opposed to it being something to do with the Alpha Pack, as in, doing it on their side or something. So I have no idea what's going on with that now.
Neither do I, but first of all, yeah, I did kind of pick up on the fact that it does sound like the Duroc is specifically fighting the Alpha Pack. And secondly, I really love the idea of these two seemingly separate plots that kind of, not that they seemed random, but it was very convenient that both were happening at the same time, are kind of now merging together in one story, and we're possibly going to get this battle between the Duroc, or maybe the Druids in general, I'm not really sure, against the Alpha Pack. Beacon Hill's werewolves are kind of caught in the middle, and I'm sure they're going to have to pick a side, possibly. That could be interesting. But
Yeah.
yeah, I really like how the two stories are kind of coming into one.
What if it's Morel? What if she's doing the sacrifices to try and, like, get
See,
power to get out of whatever she's trapped into with Deucalion?
that's kind of what I'm wondering because, I mean, I don't know if we're meant to believe that Deaton is a druid or was a druid, but if he is or was, that means Morel would be one, and it's quite possible that she could have turned dark, although it is kind of strange that she's helping them and yet at the same time preparing to fight them, unless she's a double agent or a triple agent or something, I don't know, but yeah, I think she's going to be pretty important in the battle. I just don't know what side she's on yet.
And then when she comes into, the office at the end, and Deaton tries to basically lecture her about her life choices, she says it's a little late to be playing Big Brother, don't you think? And do we think that means just like in the role, to be giving that kind of advice, or do we think it's literal? Like, oh, it's too late for you to act like my big brother now. Like, if she really
I
is.
don't know. Everything about this episode is just so confusing, and I'm not really sure about anything. And hey, maybe that's where the whole frayed concept comes from, because maybe we're supposed to be left with, is this or isn't this what's going on? But I think it's very, very possible that Deaton is Morel's big brother. I
Because
don't know
if
100% if that's going on, but.
Deaton's trying to be in hide for the last 10 years, or like push stuff away, or like whatever, there's their names. He may have a fake name, it may not be his real name or whatever, and that may not be her real name, and all of that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And now the big quote unquote reveal for the end of the episode is that Derek is still alive. Were you shocked, Karen?
Oh, completely. I never saw it coming from like any of the previews or anything.
No. I mean, What is a bit odd is that his decision, once he stumbled out of there bloody and shirt covered, you know, torn shirted, is that he decided to stumble to the one place that has always served him well, Beacon Hills High School car park, and sort of collapsed onto the door of the car of Jennifer Blake. And that's the end of the episode, where he sort of, his bloody handprint collapsing on the ground, and Jennifer Blake is like, oh my god, what is this? And it's a little odd that he would think, yeah, this is who can help me, unless there's something more to her that we don't know about, like, unless he's attracted to her without her control, you know, unless she's maybe his mate or something like that, then, you know, that he's, like, instinctually drawn to her. But, like, Melissa is a nurse who knows about werewolves. Why not go there?
Because that would have been the easy thing to do. I mean, yeah, it is very convenient that this is where he ended up. And, I mean, I don't think that he was drawn to her specifically. I think he was just maybe heading home, found out that she was there, knew that she was in on the secret, and figured, hey, I rescued you, now it's time for you to rescue me, and made it as far as you did. But I think visually it was a very kind of striking thing to have his bloody handprint on the window and then sort of collapse, and the camera shoots up and we see her leaning over him. It was a very dramatic ending, so I did enjoy that.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing about this that we found a little bit interesting that people online have found as well, by medium of GIF set, is, look, I don't know what this means. I know that there's a lot of drama about this Miss Blake because people love Steric so much. You all just need to calm down, basically. It's fine. Like, either way, it's going to be fine. It's really, it's fine. And all of that. But, like, not to open a can of worms, some people have found some really interesting parallels between scenes with Stiles and Derek and scenes with this Jennifer and Derek. This scene being one of them, where he collapses onto the car. You know, she gets in the car, Stiles gets in the car, Derek slams into the window, falls down, pretty much dying, and then they get out of the car and look at him, and then that's kind of it. And it's the same thing, but with one's with Stiles and one is with Jennifer. And again, I don't know if that's meant to represent any parallels between Stiles and her, but it is the same scenario, shot very similarly. And there is another scene in which is, again, shot very similarly, which is when Isaac threatens Stiles in the police station versus when Boyd threatens Jennifer in the boiler room, and Derek kind of, you know, alphas them away from whoever the victim is, and then kind of looks back to the victim, and then, you know, they are like, what the hell just happened? And it's, again, almost shot for shot, very, very similar. And, I mean, it's not the most unusual scenario that a human encountering werewolves would find themselves in, but those two together are kind of a weird parallel. Though, as you mentioned, the one between Stiles and Derek with the police station and Isaac versus the one between Jennifer and Derek in the boiler room, Derek's kind of result of scaring off or, you know, subduing his beta is with Stiles really, like, cocky and, like, how stupid of you, whereas Jennifer's is very kind of, like, peaceful and, like, let me help you kind of thing.
Yeah, I was mostly saying that just because I really love the difference between Derek in season 2 compared to season 3, where you can just tell his face, he just looks so different, and that he's grown up, he's more subdued, and I just really like it. As far as the gift sets go, I think, yeah, like you said, it's not surprising that there would be parallels like this. I don't think that it really means anything at this point, mostly because I really don't see, other than Derek, what those two have in common, like, at all. So I see it just sort of being coincidental, I guess. It is sort of strange there are two very specific scenes, but
yeah,
I'm not totally sure if it means anything, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I don't think it's necessarily done on purpose as some sort of parallel or foreshadowing to Steric or anything like that. Like, I don't think that, it's just interesting that people found these two scenes that are just shot for shot very similar. And yeah, I'm interested to see. Obviously, in the preview for next week, we see that Derek is definitely not dead still, and is sort of recovering with Miss Blake. So she will have a full introduction to what's going on then, presumably, rather than bits and pieces.
Yeah, I'm so excited for next week. I think it's going to be a really, really great episode. And already from her one line in the trailer, where she says, "This isn't exactly how I imagined our first date." I'm so ready to love Miss Blake. I think she's going to be really great.
Next week is Motel California, which has quite a few big aspects. Dylan O'Brien wrote a scene between Styles and Scott. It's going to be a very Lydia-heavy episode, apparently. It's going to be very Lydia-centric as a main character. And it's the episode that we're having a guest host on from our listenership. We've had a lot of applications, which is kind of, crazy, because I don't imagine us having listeners. I just imagine us, talking for 2 hours every week and kind of just, doing it sort of for our own enjoyment of talking about Teen Wolf. And I know that there are listeners technically, but, I don't think like that all of the time. And so it's wow, so many people want to come on, and it's really cool. So I wish that everyone could come on, and reading all the applications is really fun. And more episodes we get to do, the more people can come on, obviously. So the more you guys listen to the show, the longer we can run.
Yeah, exactly. I'm legitimately having a panic attack over trying to figure out who we're going to choose, because everybody's applications are seriously amazing, and I really have no idea how we're going to pick just one person.
Yeah, it is. We'll definitely have you on standby if there's a bunch of, if there's a bunch of you and we're if we just, want to have someone else on another episode later, maybe we'll just invite some more people on.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Every guest we've had has brought so much, more than I expected, and I don't mean that in a weird way. It's just people just keep impressing me and keep impressing me with how many new ideas they have and how clever everyone is. It just kills me. It just, you're all good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we'll be telling the winner on, I guess, Sunday or Saturday or Sunday about that, and then we'll record on probably Tuesday next week. So, yeah, for now, though, we will just say until then to, keep enjoying Teen Wolf and keep enjoying Teen Wolf Takeover on Hyperball. So, yeah, I'll say bye for now. So, bye-bye.
Bye, guys. Can you hear that?
Yeah, it's an appropriate sound effect.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, man.
The next flashback is basically Scott at home. Hang on. Just wait for that plane to go over.
Planes! I forgot about the planes.
Oh. Sometimes they're really, I think just sometimes there's a few runways, and I think there's just one, because I've got double glazing and actually you can't hear most of them, but just one or two just get through, and you can hear them, I guess, because they're coming really low over the house. But I saw my street from the plane when I flew back from England. My house, but I saw the shopping center on my street. So yeah, it was, that's how close it is.